Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the NVO, New Vision Organization Show. Leona Brando is the host of your show this evening. Hello, Leona. Are you there?
Yes. How are you, Mary?
Oh, I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for joining us on the Human Rights Demand. Bringing your show to Human Rights Demand channel is really excellent, and we congratulate you and welcome you and your guests today. I'll turn it over to you, Leona.
Okay, I'm just waiting for our guest to come on, but in the meantime, I'd like to speak. Pardon?
We do have one guest on the line already. You're on the line, Leona, from 1962. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, we have a guest on the line at 7735.
Okay, let me just double check with this. Okay, and our guest is Miss Hodges.
7735. How are you? 7735. How are you?
Hold on, Olivia, because she's on now. Hello.
Okay. Hi.
This is Ethel Lopez from Adjust Cons.
Oh, wonderful. Hello, Ms. Lopez.
Hi.
Well, this is Adjust Cons, a representative from Adjust Cons who represents IRP6 in the media. Regarding the wrongful arrest of 6 software executives. This is one of the representatives from Adjust Cause who is on the line with us today. Her name is Ms. Lopez. Ms. Lopez,
yes, Ms. Lopez, can you explain a little bit
about... She's a prisoner activist, and she's very interested in Adjust Cause and their wrongful incarceration. So we really appreciate your joining us today. Go ahead, Leona.
Awesome.
Yes, if you could please introduce yourselves again. I wasn't quite aware of what was happening. Who are we having on as a guest today, Ms. Lopez?
Yes, I'm Ethel
Lopez.
And I am from a Just Cause organization in Colorado with the 6 IT executives who were wrongly convicted and imprisoned.
Okay, and we have another one on with us as well?
I believe
we do.
We have a number that's showing as all ones. Hello, would you like to have a word, please? Introduce yourself. This is Mary Miller, Brando.
Ms. Lopez, okay, you're with a Just Cause out of Colorado, and I did see the website briefly. Can you tell us a little bit about what the program is about, what the organization is about? I know that you are advocating for the wrongfully convicted.
Yeah.
Now, is this for wrongfully convicted nationwide, or is it just out of Colorado?
Well, we are national, absolutely, and we are a volunteer organization. We are still in the process of getting our nonprofit rules and everything situated. But right now, we are a volunteer organization, and we were established in 2005 when the IRP6 were indicted for mail and wire fraud. And we set up this organization really because of these 6 gentlemen. And you know, after going through this for so many years and with the trials and everything that these guys have gone through, you know, we find that we need to reach out to every, you know, as many people as we can possibly reach out to, because there are so many people that are sitting in prison right now on wrongful convictions. You know, as we look at the news reports and so forth, we see how people, almost every day or every week, people are being exonerated after having been in prison for so many years.
Can you tell us a little bit about the IRP6? Because
absolutely,
a lot of people are not familiar with that.
Yes,
and these
absolutely.
These are the initial individuals who were incarcerated, wrongfully convicted.
Yes, they are.
Okay, can you talk a little bit about how that occurred and how a Just Cause came to be because of them?
Okay, Well, what it is, the IRP 6 are six gentlemen who were had set up a software development, an IT company here in Colorado Springs, Colorado, and this was back in 2002. They started this company. It's a minority-owned software development company, and they had about 15 to 19 employees that were employed at that company, you know, at that time. And these guys, as I said, were developing software. The software that they actually developed, which they had worked on for years and years and years, it was software that would be able to help law enforcement at the local, state, and federal levels to communicate with each other, you know, the different organizations. We're talking about the FBI. We're talking about ICE. We're talking about, you know, all the different levels of law enforcement. So they would be able to communicate with each other, and especially with informants and stuff like that. So the module that they were working on at the time was supposed to, you know, was an informant module. And they had basically completed that. It had been shown to different agencies, the New York Police Department, Philadelphia Police Department, the FBI, Department of Homeland Security. Department of Homeland Security was interested, and this is just a kind of a high-level overview of it, you know, so that you would understand it. And Department of Homeland Security, this was in 2005, they were interested in this software that these guys had developed. You know, they had Lockheed Martin, they had SAIC and the different ones, IBM, who had been working on trying to get them software developed for just this particular reason, you know, with the informants and so forth. But they had not been able to do it. And the Department of Homeland Security was pouring millions of dollars into these big companies to get this this software created, which to this day they still have not done. So these six gentlemen here had created this software. Department of Homeland Security was interested in it, called them up, discussed with them, you know, about they were putting them in that budget for 2005 for $100 million just for this first phase out of 18 phases, this first phase of this software, $100 million. A couple weeks after this talk came about, now Department of Homeland Security is the one who called these guys, okay, because they had heard about this software that they were developing. So about 2 weeks or so after the Department of Homeland Security had called these guys and talked to them about putting them in their budget for this $100 million for this first phase of the software, the FBI raided their business. They came in with 20, 25 FBI agents, and there were only about 15 people on staff that day when they came in. And they had a search warrant that said that they were coming in to get financial records. Well, the financial records were sitting there in the middle of the floor. All of them, that whatever they needed, they never one time touched the financial records. Instead, they took and imaged every single computer in the business, every computer, from the janitor on up to the CEO and the COO of the company. When they ran out of hard drives to put the information on, they actually went out and purchased more to finish imaging all of the computers in their business. They were there from 7 in the morning, I mean from 9 in the morning until about 11 o'clock in the evening, imaging these computers. They corralled all these people into the break room, you know, that were there at that time, and Grant, these were all minority people that were there. There was one guy, David Zerpolo, was a white gentleman who was there. They told him, you know, asked him, you know, to see his ID or what have you. They saw it, gave it back to him. They gave Dave their card and said, you know, you can leave. If you have any questions, you can call us. But all the black people, they kept them right there, corralled in the break room. They couldn't even go to the bathroom without asking permission or being escorted. So they came in. Go ahead.
It almost seems as though they were actually, well, not it seems, they were actually set up.
Absolutely. And what they were set up for was to get the software. They were not there to get financial records.
They got the software in spite of the arrest.
they did not get the software, and the reason that they did, they got little bits and pieces, but they did not get the software program because the actual CEO of the company, the president of the company, had not put it on the computers. He had talked about doing it, but he had not put the entire program on the computer, and that was just amazing that he had not even done that. So they got little bits and pieces that they were kind of pulling together and stuff like that, but that is it. That's all that they got.
Now, these six gentlemen that were wrongfully convicted, what kind of sentence did they get?
They got from 7 to 11 years on mail and wire fraud and conspiracy to commit mail and wire fraud. And this came about because they were saying that these guys were not developing software. The FBI is saying this is purported software. They're not developing any software. What they're doing is having a scheme to build staffing companies out of money, because these guys were using employees who were being paid through staffing agencies to help them, refine the software, because Department of Homeland Security had told them, if you can do this, and this to it, basically tweak what they had. Tweak the software that they had to meet their specifications. And so they had to bring on other, developers and engineers and different people like this. They needed these people who knew what they were doing, in order to get this product to what Department of Homeland Security wanted, okay? And so they went through different staffing companies in order to get these people. The staffing companies were paying these employees directly. The money was not being sent to the company. It was being these people were being paid directly from the staffing companies. So the IRP, Investigative Resource Planning Solution, is the name of their company. That's why we call them the IRP6. But the money never went through their hands ever. But
and I'm wondering, with all that money that they requested, or the budget that they got for this project that they wanted these gentlemen to do, was that money, it doesn't seem as though the whole entire monies that they had allotted for this project went to not only the six men but also to the staffers. So where did all this other money go to? Does anybody know?
Okay. They were. You're talking about the contract from Department of Homeland Security?
Yes.
Okay. They never got that contract. They were discussing, it was in discussions of them getting this contract. And
wait,
when they went to the go ahead, I'm sorry.
They didn't get the money from the contract, but did the Homeland Security, did they get that contract? I mean, did they get that money?
Because we have
cases similar to that, only I mean, of law enforcement and also FBI, CIA that are incarcerated in the United States.
Right.
And I'm beginning to wonder, a lot of these, I know they've been set up. They have been.
Mm-hmm.
And this has happened, and this is what a lot of them have claimed. But I'm wondering, when money's involved, all this large amounts of money, where does this money go? I mean, do they claim that the people that they've convicted got the money and spent it, or do they claim that they still have it? I mean, where does this money go? And right now, with the United States having a deficit, a real bad economic problem with the finances in this country, where is all this money going? That's what I would like to know.
Absolutely.
Because people are suffering
all
over.
Mm-hmm.
People are suffering all over the place. And it seems like money's just disappearing, and they claim, where's this money going? It can be going on some of these wars in other countries, but I don't believe that the monies are all going overseas, and I don't believe it's all being distributed properly in the United States of America.
Absolutely.
And there's a lot of people that are getting set up, and that's what I was wondering, if you knew if the money, where the money went to, that the CIA or the Homeland Security was speaking of all these hundreds of millions of dollars.
You know what? Because these gentlemen never got this contract, and because, like I said, after they talked to these gentlemen, after the Department of Homeland Security had talked to them about putting them in the budget, okay, 2 weeks after that, so that wasn't even time for them to even sign a contract. So they never even signed the contract, but they had been discussing it, and that's why these guys got these, they went through the staffing agencies to get these employees to help them tweak this software so that they could get it ready and for the contract that they thought that they were getting from the Department of Homeland Security. Now, what the Department of Homeland Security did with the $100 million that they were looking to contract these guys with, I have no clue. But the money that they're saying, the FBI and the prosecutor here are saying that these guys built the staffing companies, was what they're saying was over $5 million, which is what they were saying was paid to the employees that were working there and to the guys who were also contracted through staffing agencies. Okay, this is the money that they are talking about that these guys built staffing companies out of. But when they went to trial, one of the financial experts whom the FBI used, they went through every nickel that these guys got, every nickel that would, of the $5 million that they were saying that, and it wasn't $5 million, I believe it was $3 million, and then they did some interest that made it $5 or something like that. So they went through every bit of that, and they made note where every penny went. Every penny. And none of these guys, I think the highest one after over a three-year period, got less than $100,000 over a three-year period. And we're talking out of the six gentlemen, okay, who were over this company. The rest of the money went through the employees and that sort of thing. But that is it. They came up with every penny that was going through. So now that these guys are in prison, they are looking to tell them that they've got to pay back over $5 million in restitution. Well, companies have already written this off. So who are they paying over $5 million to in restitution?
Exactly. Exactly. I'd also like to know who does oversee Homeland Security? I mean, we have so many people. It's almost as though even with this commission, with something that happened in Massachusetts, and they were trying to get rid of a commissioner. And I'm saying, who oversees the commissioner? But the governor, anyone that authorizes these programs or these organizations or whatever, there should be some oversight. And
exactly.
With Homeland Security, they're watching everybody else, but who is actually watching them? Who is overseeing the Homeland Security and their activities?
Absolutely. And you know what? And as I was saying, you know, they have been paying money out hand over fist to IBM, to Lockheed Martin, to SAIC, and a different one, multimillion dollar contracts, okay? They paid them this money, and they still don't have the contract. Now, these guys were putting all of this stuff together to give to them. Then they were going to sign the contract. So they've not given these guys anything, not one copper penny, you know, except talk to them about, you know, having this contract and having this $100 million put in the budget. I'm sorry, okay, it sounded like somebody was talking. I'm sorry. Okay, but anyway, you know, this is the type of thing, and you've got this little black company here in Colorado Springs, Colorado, and in Colorado, the minority rate here is, what, 4%? About 4%. So you're talking a $100 million contract for one module out of 18 modules to this little black company that came in and developed software that was good enough for Department of Homeland Security. They were not going to let that happen. They want that software, but they were not going to let these black guys get that money. They were not going to let that happen here. That's the bottom line, is that they wanted that software, and they were not going to allow these guys to be the one to get it.
You know, I actually believe in this country we have two governments. We have a hidden government, and we have an exposed government. And I think there's a lot of injustices going on behind the doors of a government that really maybe wants to do something, but they don't know what's going on, and they're taking their information from people who are trying to destroy. I think this is what's happening in this country. And also we know that we have these large corporations that are overseeing the whole country. So it's not really, even the president doesn't have the power with the corporations that are out there, and these corporations are making themselves bigger and bigger by
what
they're doing, exactly what you're talking about. And this is going on just not with those unfortunate six individuals, but this is going on with people throughout the country. There's a lot of minorities are paying through the nose, but then there's others as well. So this is a very sad situation, and something has to come of it. But I'd like to know who is overseeing these people, who are overseeing these facilities in the communities that are supposed to be preventative programs, so people don't end up in prison. These preventative programs, you know, the substance abuse treatment programs, mental illness, the mental health care facilities. Who oversees them? Because if people are overseeing others, then maybe certain things are going to get done that should get done, and people are not going to be wrongfully convicted or unjustly sentenced.
Exactly.
And we have a major problem in this country, because we have a government that's so divided that they can't come together themselves. We have people in other countries that are looking at the United States as though they're so ignorant and uneducated, and they can't even come together. How can you rule a whole country when you can't even come together amongst yourselves?
Absolutely.
And then the injustice going on, the racism, the hatred that's going on in this country. I cannot fathom how anybody can have that kind of hatred in them or that kind of deceit in them, unless this is the way they were raised from childhood to adulthood. And going back to slavery times, we still have a lot of descendants who still have the mentality of the slavery days, back in the days when their family members or ancestors were slave masters. These things here, they have to overcome, because changes have gone all throughout the years. People have to overcome these past issues. And the sad thing about it is a lot of them don't. And a lot of these people in government today, I think, have that same mentality as in the days of their ancestors. And this is why we have such a major problem with coming together in this country, a government coming together to really work on issues of the injustices in the prisons throughout the country.
Mm-hmm.
This is, it's so unbalanced. It's a blind eye to justice. And we have to try to figure out a way to make these people realize that times have changed. And it's sad, because too many people are being wrongfully convicted. Too many people are being set up to end up in prison, some of them for life without. Look at all these people on death row that have been executed. And this most recent one, where it was a botched execution, and it wasn't the first time that they did something like this. It was they had a botched execution in the past in Texas. So all of these things are happening.
That's correct.
We need to all come together as advocates and activists throughout the country. We need to come together, and we really need to start doing something about it. A lot of people will get on these chat rooms and they'll talk about it, but no one will come together. There's petitions out there. I've even put petitions out there to help the first time offenders of fatalities, or to help with the mail tampering. You get 100 or 200 people that sign on that petition, but we have advocates, thousands of advocates in this country. I wonder sometimes, are they really advocates and activists to help the incarcerated, or are they spies within these activist groups to find out information to take back to those who are really trying to set people up? So I'm very distrusting of a lot of advocates out there that don't do anything but talk about it. And this is what we need to do, because we as activists and advocates across the country, thousands of us, we have that power to make changes in the government and to address these issues, these very issues that even you're talking about with these unfortunate six individuals.
Yeah.
There's no reason why they should have been sent to prison. There's no answer to where the money went to. There's no justification in any of this.
And, you know, Rihanna, may I have a word?
Please.
Oh, thank you. I want to say that at RP6, there's six men, 5 blacks and 1 white, and they developed software that Homeland Security and other law enforcement agencies wanted. And when they met with Homeland Security, they gave them certain specifications before signing contract for over $100 million. They had certain specifications. They went to the temp service to give them the use of certain high-tech personnel, and they wrapped up a bill with the temporary agencies that they couldn't readily pay until they actually made the sale or got a small business loan. So that's the gist of it. They were raided and arrested based on the idea that they committed fraud against the temporary service agencies. It's a fraud charge, as I understand it. The thing is that the judge, when he had his jury there, they did not tell the jury that intent has to be a part of fraud. If you're going to be convicted of fraud, you have to have the intention of defrauding people.
Right.
These IRP-6 had no intention of defrauding the temporary service companies. Their intention was to pay them just as soon as they made the sale, which they didn't expect to be that long away. Also, they were trying to get a business loan. So either way, they had a viable product, and they knew they were going to sell it. They were in talks with, as I said, Homeland Security and other law enforcement agencies to purchase their software, and they knew that they would either get a business loan or they would be able to make a sale and pay the temporary service companies. But in any case, in any case, there was no fraud because there was no intention of defrauding anyone.
Exactly.
And secondly, you have to be able to show intent. And thirdly, even if it was a situation where they had overdue bills, and that's the situation, we don't have a debtor's prison in America. There's no way these men should be in prison because they owe temporary service companies. And again, the same government that they were busy getting temp people to tweak the product for them, the same government sent in people who raided their company, and apparently with that idea in mind, to loot them. And I wrote an article I want to make you aware of, and it's called IRP-6, and it's called They Suppress Black Achievement and Then Call Us Lazy. They suppress black achievement, being called us lazy. Now, what happened to these five black and one white software designers is pretty much the same thing that's happened throughout our history in the United States, starting immediately after slavery. Blacks who did well, they penalized. They would actually get mobs and go and burn them out like they did in Tulsa, Oklahoma, like they did in Rosewood, Florida, like they did in Memphis, Tennessee, like they did in Forsyth County, Georgia. All across the country, when blacks did establish their own towns and their money rotated through their own communities to the point that certain businessmen were getting to be millionaires or were headed that direction, the towns were burnt to the ground. They were looted for all of their possessions, and the owners of those possessions were often killed or arrested. So what happened to IRP-6 is no different. Now, I say looted because it appeared to many observers that the government was there to loot them, to get their software without paying the $100 million or without paying anything at all. They wanted, they wanted the information off the computers. They had a warrant letting them get the financial records, since they had a financial charge against them, but they didn't even want the financial records. They wanted the data from the computers.
Exactly.
And so it's nothing. It seems to be a repeat of what happened in 1892 in Memphis, Tennessee, when this black man, Thomas Moss, and two of his friends, were they were arrested for defending themselves against a racist mob. They were arrested for that. And when they got arrested, they were lynched, because they defended themselves against some police officers who were hired by a rival storekeeper. A white man had a store nearby, and he said, these black people have opened a store near mine, and all the black people are going to them instead of coming to my store, and I want you to go and raid them. That's what he told the police in Memphis. And the police actually
did go to raid them. People in this country are not ignorant to the fact of the slavery times, even with Emmett Till and the civil rights. But they're not ignorant to it. They want to be ignorant to it. That's the problem.
Yeah.
They want to be, but they're not. And their children have grown up knowing the truth about slavery times and what our people went through. They went because they're educated. If they go to college or if they go to high school, even they're taught about all of this. So it's not as though they don't know. It's as though they don't care, and that's
exactly.
What the problem is in this country. A lot of people don't care. I'll tell you, it's sad because Martin Luther King, as hard as he worked. He made a lot of progress, and so didn't even Malcolm X. But the problem is, one was too extreme, and the other one wasn't extreme enough. And as a result, we have some people who, I mean, for a black president and black governors to get elected, we know we have to have some people the black race that's voting for these people. But the problem is these people already are aware of all of this this racism that's going on in this country. It's something they don't need to be taught. They already know it, and they have it deep in their instilled in their skin and their bones. But the problem is coming up with resolutions again. That's the main thing, because we can go on forever talking about the racism in this country and where it started from and everything. But we need to figure out how to overcome it. We need to figure out how to make it right so that our young men and women across this country are not going back to the days of slavery and being persecuted and executed and set up and everything else, and that's what's happening.
Yeah. And
too many of them.
And with saying that, we have to also look at doing something as far as these rogue prosecutors and judges, because in the case of the IRP 6 case, you know, you have an FBI agent who went to a judge and got a search warrant based on a lie. This man already knew and already been told that this software was viable software that these guys were creating. And what happened is there were three former federal government employees, I think it was a couple of them from the FBI, who were actually working in the business. Okay, and they were working based on getting paid after the software sold. They weren't getting paid during the time that they were working. They were based on after the software was sold, they were going to get paid. And that's what they had told the FBI. No, this is good software. You know, we know that the software is going to sell. So we're waiting. We'll work for free until this software is sold. They knew that before they went to this judge to get this search warrant. And then, you know, you have the judge, the prosecutor, the lawyer from Holland and Hart, who brought this thing. He was a previous prosecutor. He brought over the charges to the USAU, the U.S. attorney, assistant attorney, right then and there, and told him, he hand-carried it to him and said, this is what I want you to charge these six gentlemen with. This is everything. He laid it out in writing, handed it to him, and told him this is what he wanted done. And that was because one of the staffing agencies, the president of one of the staffing agencies, had gone to this law firm and talked to this man, okay? Ms. Susan Holland went to Holland and Hart, and we feel that she knows somebody personally in Holland and Hart, but she went to them and told them that these people were not paying her, okay? And this is how this thing came about here with these guys being indicted. Then you have a prosecutor who not calls just one grand jury when the first grand jury would not come back with a bill to indict these guys. He calls a second grand jury, and he only calls one FBI agent as a witness, just one witness. And that's how they went and got an indictment for these guys.
Mm-hmm.
So these people are crooked all over the place. I mean, all of this stuff. You got all the judge, the prosecutor, the U.S. attorney. Then you have all of them working in the same law firm, having been a partner or having done some business within the same law firm who brought forth these charges about these guys, who hand-carried this stuff over.
Let me ask you something about the case right now. right now is not understanding that they will not release the entire transcript from that first kangaroo court trial. They will not release the transcript to be able to put together a good appeal.
And you know what? And that is it. It's the main part. Is that they will not release over 200 pages of the transcript.
They're not releasing the transcript from the first trial. And secondly, the other thing is that the whole thing should have been handled in civil court,
in
between the temporary company and the software company. It should have been handled in civil court because it's basically to collect a debt.
And you know what, Mary? That is what the FBI came back and told them when the staffing agencies went to them to say, hey, we need these guys to be indicted. They're brought up on charges because they are not paying. They wrote them back and told them this is a civil matter. It needs to be handled in civil court. But instead,
I just want to say one thing real quick. My phone beeped while I was talking before and started to lose track of what I was saying. When I looked at the caller ID, it was my own number ringing back to me. Now, tell me that that's not some form of what?
Surveillance.
Buddy, I'm telling
you. Know what I'm saying?
All the time here as well.
And this is the kind of thing that I, you know, when Mary mentioned it one time, I thought she was crazy. But I'll tell you one thing. Since we've been doing all of this, I have noticed a big change in the way things are happening with my own emails and phone. And it's sad because, it's not sad in a way because people, we must be doing something right or finding out something for this to be occurring. And maybe that's a plus because maybe now this is the things that we can start working on. But I'll tell you, right now, the way things are going, again, we are living in a very corrupt place, and the judges in the courts today, they cannot be trusted. They're just as deceitful as any criminal can possibly be. There's prisoners who have really justifiable claims that they have lawsuits going on, justifiable claims about the abuses that they have gone through, and the judges refuse to give them counsel. Refuse to allow them public counsel to defend themselves in these Department of Corrections. They have so many lawyers and everyone that they can fight them with that these guys don't have a chance. This is the way it's been going for a long time. And again, to me, these judges, they're just as corrupt as can be. And
that's
if anybody needs to be investigated, I'm sorry to say, it's a lot of these judges. And now prisoners have gotten to the point where they don't even trust attorneys. Because attorneys now want to get a piece of that pie. So they're not being as honest and upfront with these prisoners either. And it's sad because
When you give these judges, these federal judges, lifetime appointments, and then these prosecutors are immune from being prosecuted, you know, what do you have?
Yeah.
You know, they can do anything they want to do. They are destroying, and people sit back. We have our own radio show that we do, JustCause.com. But we talk about the judicial injustices, and it's so many different things in the articles that we read on a weekly talking about what has happened out here, what has taken place. All of these people are being set up for no reason. You know, the prosecutor is hiding evidence, and I mean just all kinds of stuff going on. This is where this thing needs to get started, and we need more people crying out saying, do something. Black people are the ones who are filling up the prisons, you know, for no reason. Our families are the ones that are being destroyed for no reason. We need to stand up and fight, and we need people to stand up and make their voices heard, but they are afraid. They are afraid.
You know,
well, if I do that, maybe I'll be the next one to get my door knocked on. You could be the one next one to get your door knocked on if you don't do it.
Exactly, and that's how a lot of prisoners feel today. If they're going to be abused anyway, if they're going to be tortured anyway and treated like that, they might as well come forth. And this is why so many prisoners today have actually started filing lawsuits, have actually started going and the U.S. Department of Justice I'm very disappointed with because they have the power to make a change.
Absolutely.
And unfortunately, and unfortunately, they're not doing what I thought that they would do at one time. I thought that they would be out there trying to help these prisoners. Unless it's a class action lawsuit, they don't have the funds to do it. This is what.
And Leona,
this is
you
what
know
the,
what? We have an our organization, we have people that are calling, about 30 people that are calling Attorney General Eric Holder's office on a daily basis over the last 2 years. And what we have been asking him, you've got 6 men that have been sitting in prison now over 22 months. There are over 200 pages of the trial transcript missing. They cannot get a fair appeals hearing without the transcript. So would you please investigate? He's the high sheriff of this country. That is his job. When I talked to Annie Bradley, who is his personal or confidential assistant, when I first started calling, she said, Mr. Holder is the one who has to call the attorney general there in Colorado. That's his boss. He's the one who has to talk to him. We've left messages. We've sent faxes. We've made phone calls. This is a daily thing when we have not heard one peep out of him yet. They pass it on from one office to the next one. We're not responsible for this. You have to call the Office of Professional Responsibility. They send back a letter saying, we're not responsible for this. You have to check with the Civil Division. They say, we're not responsible for this. You have to go to the courts or the clerk's office. And it goes on and on and on, and these men still languish in prison, and their families are sitting here just, you know, how do you do that and not answer? If it was Eric Holder's son, he would have done something by now.
You know, the thing is, they'd make a way for them because they were relatives. That's how they do. The politicians, they all stick together. If their kids mess up, there's a way out for them.
There is.
And that's the way it works. Kiss tail, and we will protect our kids. That's why you have it, even with that football player, the reporter there. His son got away with this so many times. The father stuck up for him so many times that finally when he did kill the girl, what happens? He had no choice but to go to prison. So now all of a sudden the father's back reporting, but it could have been prevented if the father didn't try to protect or they didn't try to protect their loved one all those years. So it's okay to protect your own loved one, but let somebody else's loved one rot away in prison, and they don't do crap about it. They don't care.
That's it.
They try to cover one another.
Doesn't a just cause, doesn't don't these defendants, these inmates, have a right? This is not a privilege. Don't they have a right to have a copy of their entire lower court proceedings? Isn't that a
absolutely
right to be
absolutely
able to have your
and you know what? And the thing is with it,
this isn't
they ask for that.
This isn't something you're asking for as a special favor. If you
that's
go
right
to court, you have a right to get
you have
your
a
entire
right
court proceedings. Unless
absolutely
they're, what are they hiding? Why won't they give the entire court proceedings so that these men can create the best and most appropriate appeal that they can? Why
and you know what?
A few hundred pages be hidden from them and out of their reach? And also I'd like to ask you, what other media companies, what mainstream media companies are covering this story, please?
Okay, with the 200 pages of the transcript that is missing, within those 200 pages is a bench conference that was held. And during that bench conference is where this judge violated the defendant's Fifth Amendment right and told them, if one of you don't take the stand, I am going to close your case. Okay,
mm-mm,
that is what's included, and who knows whatever else is included in over 200 pages. And we know that that is missing because she is in dialogue with the court reporter in the other part of the transcript that we do have. And asking the court reporter how many pages is missing, the court reporter tells her over 200 pages. And she says, well, I don't see any reason why they need to have that right now, and I'm not going to expedite it. Because they had asked for it right there on the spot.
Could
and
you
she
tell
would
me
not
what
give it
mainstream
to
media companies are covering this atrocity? What
now,
is it, NPR, NBC, ABC, CNN? Who is covering the story of